This morning, we're going to begin our time today and spend quite a bit of time this morning, actually, with Henry David Thoreau, who I was lovingly reminded of by colleague Eric Walker Wickstrom over our travels in Ottawa and Montreal recently. Henry David Thoreau was a Unitarian Transcendentalist who lived from 1817 to 1862. He was only 44 when he passed away. And his most well-known book, Walden, or Life in the Woods, has lots of gems in it. Thoreau, as you may be aware, spent 2 years living in a small, self-built house on land that I only recently discovered was owned by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Thoreau lived there and began living there in July of 1845. That house and the pond are lovely places to visit if you ever find yourself in the greater Boston area. And it was on the shores of Walden Pond, which was only a very short distance from Thoreau's family home, 2.4 kilometers to be exact, that he wrote the book Walden. And here are some of the words from that book. We must learn to reawaken and keep ourselves awake, not by mechanical aids, but by an infinite expectation of the dawn, which does not forsake us even in our soundest sleep. I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of humans, he said man, to elevate his or her life by a conscious endeavor. It is something to be able to paint a particular picture or to carve a statue and so to make a few objects beautiful. But it is far more glorious to carve and paint the very atmosphere and medium through which we look, which morally we can do, to affect the quality of the day. That is the highest of arts. He goes on in one of the most oft-quoted passages of Walden to write, I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I did not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear. Nor did I wish to practice resignation unless it was quite necessary. I wanted to live deep and suck all the marrow of life, to live sturdily and Spartan-like, to put a route to all that was not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. So wrote Thoreau in 1845. Growing in spirit. Nine of us in this community spent the Victoria Day long weekend in Ottawa with 250 or so of our Unitarian and Universalist brothers and sisters, connections from across Canada, to explore the topic of spiritual leadership. It was an inspiring and engaging several days. And as part of the kickoff to the weekend, our keynote guest speaker, who I mentioned earlier, Reverend Eric Walker Wickstrom, decided it best to offer an overarching definition of spirituality. He also acknowledged up front that it isn't everyone's cup of tea. Not everybody likes the word spirituality, and some among us don't even really particularly want any spirituality, thank you very much. But he said it was important to define our terms. What were we talking about, this spirituality stuff? And he said he didn't want to offer a perfect definition. He couldn't offer a once and for all definitive definition, but he could at least attempt to express what is meant by the word spirituality. Now, I have heard many in our midst express frustration that we don't have a single definition, nonetheless a shared sense of what being spiritual means to us collectively. But what was interesting is that Eric Walker Wickstrom took us back to one of our forebears. He took us back to Walden. He took us back to Thoreau. He spoke of how one time, upon hearing the quotation that I just read to you, the second part especially, about living deliberately and wanting to front only the essential facts of life to figure out what life had to teach. Eric Walker Wickstrom said he heard someone speaking about that passage once and things just came together. Spirituality, our guest told us last weekend, is living this sort of attentive life of which Thoreau speaks. We each know in our own way what it is to live, to be fully alive, living with attention and intention paid to what matters most. And we also know the not life of which Thoreau speaks. We know the feeling of moving from day to day without much of a sense of why. We drift about sometimes without focus or sensibility about why we're here or what we want to accomplish with our lives. So in this Thoreauvian sense, our guest told us, to be a spiritual person is to live in a way that deliberately seeks meaning, that seeks to savor and appreciate what is. So I went back to Thoreau. I went back to the source to see what Thoreau said. I did not wish to live that what was not life. Living is so dear, he says. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life. He wanted to see if he could figure out what the essential facts of life were. Notice he doesn't say he went to the woods to find out what was inessential and frivolous. He didn't go and set aside 2 years of his life to ponder the pond and the woods around him and the heart beating inside of him so that he could figure out what didn't really matter much. He wanted to figure out what it really meant, at least for him, there and now, to be alive. Now, as I sat with Thoreau a little bit after this reminder from my colleague, I thought about how Thoreau, in many ways, had lots of predecessors who would have framed his idea about what it means to truly be alive slightly differently. They too believed that it was important to pay attention to life, to chart one's living, but they differed in their sense of how best to do that. They thought that the mind was key. Our ability to think about and reflect upon our choices, to make informed decisions, was most central to being human. Hundreds of years of philosophy will tell you. Think about René Descartes saying, "I think, therefore I am." He wrote those words in 1637. You could even go all the way back to Socrates, if you want. Socrates, who lived from 469 to 399 BC, whose words only made it through to us because of some of his major students, most well known of which is Plato, who told us that Socrates once wrote, or at least said during a lecture, that the greatest good of a man, is daily to converse about virtue. And all that concerning which you hear me examining myself and others, and that the life which is unexamined is not worth living. You remember this, right? The unexamined life is not worth living. Looking at our lives and thinking carefully about them can be a form of spiritual practice. So whether you're more of a Socrates and Descartes kind of spiritual person, I would still argue you are a spiritual person. You who look and think about your life, think closely about the decisions you make, think that part of what makes us human beings different from all other forms of life is our ability to discern and decide, to nuance, and to find new ways. Or perhaps you're more of a Thoreauvian. Perhaps if you could, you would build a little shack in the woods, spend 2 years on your own, thinking and writing and getting in touch with your spirit, being fed by the natural world, trying to discern what is essential to living. Either way, it matters not to me which way you choose, but that every once in a while we pause as we do. That's part of why we're here in a spiritual community. To be helped in discerning what is essential to our living and what is a window dressing distraction. Are we living up to our life's aspirations? Are we pleased with and proud of what we have done with our lives? Have we savored all that we could? When we wrote our mission statement this fall, it wasn't surprising that spiritual growth rose to the top of the list. In fact, we said some of our mission statement with our new members this morning, and spiritual growth was right at the top. Because what are we here for as a community, a spiritual community, if it's not for helping one another grow? Why does our church community exist, we asked when we were working on our mission statement. What are we here to do and to be? And when we asked those questions and when we distilled your answers, it was so obvious that the first task you saw for this, your spiritual home, the primary reason for being was to offer opportunities for you to flower and to bloom, to grow and to know in new ways who you are, why you're here, and what we could all do together to share some of our spiritual essence with the world. You made it clear that you wanted services and courses and connections among us that deepen our days. It's what makes this institution different from a social service agency or a school or any other organization you can think of. It's not my role or Reverend Melora's role or any minister's role to stand before you each week and speak to you of things in the way a journalist would, or a professor, or to argue one side of issues in our world as a lawyer might. My role and our role together is to lift up life, to ask that we live as best we can so that our corner of the world might be enriched by our presence. One of the purposes of spiritual community is this, that it can serve as a place that reminds us, perhaps even implores us, to look at our lives, especially in those moments when we don't want to. Our community exists in large measure to hold before us the meaning of life questions that we might otherwise forget or allow to be pushed aside by life's clutter. So I ask you this morning, what legacy do you want to leave? What does being fully alive mean to you? What are your beliefs about death and the afterlife? Our church community is here to ask you to continually look at the quality of your life. Some people hear the phrase quality of life and they think it's just an end of life question. But I beg to differ. I don't want to know just when I go to visit you toward the end of your life how you felt about the quality and the depth of your days. I want to know now. Are you happy? Are you satisfied? Are you content with the quality, not the quantity, the quality of your life? Are you living from the center of your values? From the center of your being? Or are you skating the surface and the edges, getting by with minimal real engagement with life? Here, together, we can reinforce the values that we hold dear, the connections and relationships that sustain us, and the ways of being that help us join Thoreau in living deliberately. I think the truth of the matter is that if I asked you to finish the sentence, spirituality is, you could all come up with something. It might be a story about an experience you had. It might be an evolving definition you've been working on, trying to craft and refine for many years or weeks or months now. It might be a felt sense that you have, that spirituality is something more like an intuition, something you can't exactly explain, but know is there. It's been reported to us that on his deathbed, Henry David Thoreau's Aunt Louisa was speaking with him and asked him if he had made his peace with God. Thoreau's reply was simply, "I did not know we had ever quarreled." In fact, as I was reading about the end of Thoreau's life, several people reported that he seemed to be one of the happiest, most tranquil people facing his own end here at the age of 44, that family and friends gathered round and spoke with him, that he had much to say, that he did not seem fearful or worried. So my prayer for us this morning is that we will, with Thoreau, be able to find the spiritual centeredness that will allow us to both suck the marrow out of life and not be quarrelsome with the big questions. May we balance a life full of joy in the face of the delights of life and equanimity in the face of life's mysteries and setbacks. May we continue the journey of life, always open to the growth and change that it has to offer. Blessed be, and amen.